Welcome to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast with Michael Becker and Paul Peebles. During this program, you will hear interviews with real-life successful investors who will share their stories and provide useful advice on how to acquire, finance, and operate apartment complexes. Now, here they are, Michael Becker and Paul Peebles.
Welcome to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Peebles, National Underwriter for Old Capital. And typically joining me today would be the mayor, the governor himself, Mr. Michael Becker, but he is on another due diligence assignment. So joining us in the podcast today, John Brixen. John Brixen from Old Capital. John, how are you?
Paul, doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for hanging out with us, John. John joined Old Capital probably about a year and a half ago.
February of 2018.
So he does an outstanding job of putting financing together for multifamily properties. Make sure you go to the Old Capital website, look for John Brixen, and he is your man. So John, thanks for being with us today. So what is going on in the Old Capital world today? Don't forget, October. October is the annual multifamily conference for Old Capital. That is where we're going to have about 700 investors throughout the nation. So come on down on an airplane. Whether it is Southwest or American Airlines, come on down to see us at the House of Blues. We're going to have an outstanding keynote speaker. I can't tell you. I know, John, you're looking at me. I can't tell you yet who it is going to be, but the next week or two, we will announce who it's going to be. So I know everyone's going to be looking forward to that.
We're waiting.
It's going to be a great one. So one of the big pieces I think that people do want to come listen to is that we're going to have some of the old timers, people that have been doing it for 30 or 35 years. As owner-operators, and these owner-operators are going to get up on stage, and they're going to talk about how they kept their balance sheets straight, how they didn't get sued, how they didn't have to ask for capital calls for their investors. So we're going to have these four or five people in rocking chairs telling us kids how it was done and how it's being done today to keep your balance sheets straight. We hear too many people talk about whether they were house flipping 2 years ago and they got into multifamily today. Now, we want to listen to some of the people that have been around for a long period of time and how they operate and how you can operate in the future. So take lessons from these folks, and you definitely want to be at the Old Capital Multifamily Conference. Go to oldcapitalpodcast.com, oldcapitalpodcast.com, and RSVP to come to this great event. So we look forward to seeing you there. Again, if you want to go back to iTunes and give us a five-star rating, we would appreciate that. That's always helpful. And then also to a 17-page white paper report on Multifamily Financing 101. John Brixen helped us write this about how to actually structure multifamily transactions for you. If you're new to multifamily, you want to learn how to get your biggest partner, your lender, into the transaction. So we typically bring 75 to 80% of the money. So get to know us, get to know how our transactions are closed. So I think you'll be happy to read that 17-page white paper report on oldcapitalpodcast.com. So in the podcast today, we have some friends of ours that we've known for a good period of time that are just knocking the ball out of the park in multifamily investment sales in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Austin, San Antonio, and especially the San Antonio marketplaces. So in the podcast today, we have the guys from Multifamily Group, Paul Yazbek and Jonathan Krebs. John, how are you?
Doing well, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Paul, how are you?
Good morning. Great to be here.
So I'm going to kick it over to John Brixen here in a second, but I want to kind of get a little bit about your background. Paul, you served our country for a number of years. Tell me a little bit about your background, and when did you transition into multifamily?
So I went to the University of Colorado on an ROTC scholarship, and then subsequently got sent to Fort Hood, which brought me to Texas, originally from Twin Cities, Minnesota. And the Army brought me down to Texas back in 2003, and it's been a great place to live. Was at the Army from 2003 to 2008. During that time, did 27 months in Baghdad, Iraq, during Operation Iraqi Freedom, both 2 and 4. After getting out of the Army in 2008, came to Dallas. Been in Dallas since 2008, now home. And during the financial crisis, got out in 2008 of the Army. A tough place for a former captain with no business experience to enter the job place. Tried a few different things, did some sales, but really cut my teeth in real estate doing loan sales for the FDIC. During the crisis, got my MBA from the University of Texas, and then transitioned from flipping houses and getting to know some of the REITs that were active back in that time. But flipping houses, started with SFR portfolio sales, joined a nationally recognized commercial real estate firm, starting due to SFR portfolios while learning multifamily, and then became one of Sperry Van Ness, or SVN's, top brokers in 2017, finishing number 7 in the country out of 1,100 brokers. And at that point, decided that it would be best to start our own company. And John and I had worked at SVN since 2015 together, and decided to start the multifamily group.
That's great. So can I go back to your time in the service? Tell us a little bit more about what did you do in the Middle East, and again, how long were you there?
So I spent 27 months there. So from March 2004 to March 2005, I was a second lieutenant, brand new butter bar in the 1st Cavalry Division of 1st Brigade. And my job was a communications officer. So I had a team of 20 people that worked for me, and we were in charge of all the radios, all the computers, the networks for a logistics battalion. And they brought goods all over Baghdad for all the different combat groups, spent time both in East Baghdad as well as West Baghdad, had a couple jobs during that first 12-month rotation, came back to the U.S. stateside, deployed for Hurricane Katrina, spent some time in Louisiana, and then October 2006, went back with 1st Cav again, this time in a field artillery unit, and we did convoy escort for the State Department. We did indirect fire for all over Baghdad, and we lived in the former Ba'ath Party headquarters in the Green Zone.
Wow.
While we were there, they were starting to build the U.S. Embassy right across the street from us. Ended up spending 15 months on that rotation because during that time it was the surge, and they needed troops to stay. So we spent 15 months during that second rotation, which was a long time to be away from home, as you can imagine. I got back in January 2008 to the U.S., and my time was up in the Army, and got out in June a few months later.
Sounds great. It's the middle of summer here in Texas. Is it hotter in Texas, or is it hotter in Baghdad at this time of the year?
It is warmer in Baghdad, but as they say, it is a dry heat. So more like your Phoenix, maybe. And you're fully clothed from head to toe, and that keeps you kind of a little more comfortable. But no, I definitely prefer the Texas summers and the Texas the air conditioning we have here.
All right. Jonathan Krebs, tell me a little bit about your background, what you do, you know, what your history is. How did you get into multifamily?
Thanks, Paul. I grew up out in West Texas, Lubbock, Texas, born and raised out there, and went to Texas Tech University. I moved to Dallas.
That's guns up for everybody?
That's right. I moved to Dallas in November of 2013. I had gotten a job with Henry S. Miller, a real estate company here in Dallas.
Which is a very large brokerage company, regional brokerage company here in Texas. You know, they've been around for 100 years, I'd say.
It wasn't unusual to see Roger Staubach up there, last year's Old Capitals keynote speaker. He started at the Henry S. Miller Company while he was still with the Cowboys,
yeah,
and grew his career from there.
Great company. So you spent some time with them, and then you also then went over to Sperry Van Ness?
That's right. I met Paul at Sperry Van Ness in April of 2015.
So this is kind of an unusual podcast because we have two Pauls and two Johns here at this. We're almost like the Beatles. So tell me a little bit about what did you do for Sperry Van Ness, and were you in apartment sales?
So I'm going to go back a little further. When I was going to Tech, there was a big redevelopment project next to the campus, 320 acres, that was used to be called the Tech Ghetto. It was raised by a local developer there, and Walmart came in, and Dinerstein built some communities. They sold to American Campus Communities. Garfield Traub built a high-rise hotel, and that's kind of what got me into real estate. My parents helped me buy a quadruplex, or helped me get a loan for a quadruplex over there next to Tech, and I lived there while I was going to school and fixed it up, and then worked for some property managers locally there in Lubbock and developers, and kind of got my feet wet there. That was how I was able to get on at Henry S. Miller. Henry S. Miller didn't do much multifamily, but I was in their management group, and they had a big portfolio of properties, multifamily properties they were managing. So I started calling around, very quickly realized management was a tough business to recruit new clients to. So I just asked everybody that I talked to, seemed like they wanted to buy, so I started asking people if they wanted to sell. We got my first deal done at Henry S. Miller, was pleading with somebody to pay $23,000 a unit for a deal down in South Dallas.
And I remember.
I called you and we talked. And then so I went over to Sperry Van Ness and was doing straight multifamily sales over there.
So you guys have been just knocking the ball out of the park. And so now I'm going to turn it over to John Brixen. Let's get some questions answered here, John.
Sure. Yeah, thanks, Paul. So Jonathan and Paul So you guys, you know, obviously had a lot of success when you're at Sperry Van Ness, and, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of large national firms that would have been happy to have you guys on board. There's national firms that don't have a footprint in Dallas that would love to have one. So when you guys started Multifamily Group, why start your own boutique brokerage rather than just joining a large firm with a national footprint?
You know, we probably both have different takes on that a little bit, but I would say the opportunity to start our own business was an opportunity to create something of value. And we both really like growing teams. We both had small teams at SVN, and we enjoy the mentorship. We enjoy growing. John is especially talented on the marketing side and the branding. As we were exploring different options for where we would go, you know, SVN was a franchise-owned business, and they had over 200 offices. And you look at that, and, you know, they were probably at the time the eighth-ranked brand in commercial real estate. So we were winning business without a large brand presence already. And so, and oftentimes we'd call on owners and we'd tell them who we're with, and it sometimes didn't resonate what Sperry Van Ness was or SVN was. So we thought, well, if we start our own firm, for the deal size we're doing in that $5 to $15 million range, it really is hard work making the calls. And I spoke with a couple of clients and I asked them, does it matter to you what company I'm with? And one of them very clearly said to me, Paul, people sell properties, not companies. So that was, right, to me, giving a lot of confidence that if we went on our own, as long as we're doing the right thing by clients, adding value, that we would have success.
Yeah, that's right. I think Paul and I both had a lot of success, and we thought that we could carry that over. We'd gotten the confidence of some clients. We took on some tough assignments that some of the bigger shops, for whatever reason, you know, either didn't give the attention it deserved or couldn't sell, and we were able to get it done. So, you know, from that respect, we both have MBAs. We were kind of entrepreneurial, like a lot of folks in this business are.
Sure.
And so we just thought, you know, let's see what we can do. Again, coming from Henry S. Miller, I saw, you know, guys like Herb Weitzman start the Weitzman Group here in Dallas. Guys right. like Roger Staubach start, you know, SRS. And so, and there's countless others, right, that came from that. So it was, you know, kind of already in my DNA to go off and create a brand for myself.
Can't wait to see the John Krebs and Paul Yezbeck successful company. How many people do you guys currently have that sell real estate with you guys?
So we currently have 9 brokers, 1 full-time marketer, and 2 analysts. And we're probably in a position here. We released out 3,000 square feet at Fitzhugh and 75 last July, and we have space for probably another 1 to 3 producers. So now we're starting to look at established brokers. We have a lot of new brokers. We've trained some that were analysts for us before and now are new brokers, and they're getting a lot of traction. But we're in a good spot.
That's great.
Well, it seems like you guys have done a good amount of business since you started. And so I guess where we sit today, it's July 2019. What's the current state of the market? What are you guys seeing? You know, are there any kind of catalyst out there for a downturn, or what's your take on current state?
So I think last year the concern was interest rates, and we've seen over the last couple of months those really come down, and that's given a shot in the arm to the market. People, you know, we were quoting green financing on Fannie and Freddie deals below 4%, and we hadn't seen that in a while, since maybe the summer of 2016. So I think that's been big. There's still a lot of appetite for product. We're in a lot of different markets. We've got deals in escrow in El Paso, Houston, San Antonio, Killeen, and about to put a couple in escrow in Arlington and Grand Prairie. So the market is out there. People want to buy, and sellers are willing to sell for the right price.
Yeah, for us, you know, transaction volume is about double from where it was year to date in 2018. Part of that's the company growth, but the market's remain strong, and, you know, we'll see going in 2020, the election cycle, if that changes anything.
Sure. And I think one that's unique about you guys compared with other listing brokers that we interact with here in the Dallas-Fort Worth market is you seem to be active across Texas and Oklahoma, or at least, you know, pretty active in other markets across the state and up in Oklahoma. So are there any markets out there that you think are unique or interesting, or markets that maybe people aren't looking at that they should?
I would say that, you know, because we are client focused, we can go wherever clients have deals. We found a lot of interest in San Antonio recently, last several months, in part maybe underbrokered, but a lot of buyers that maybe are priced out of DFW are looking at San Antonio a little more seriously. We found that anything we have in Killeen, Texas, while it's a small tertiary market for Texas, garners more interest than anything in Oklahoma, even if it's in OKC or Tulsa. It is easier to broker down in Killeen. And a lot of people don't know that Killeen's actually larger than Waco, whereas Waco, you know, with maybe some of the syndication groups, seems safer than a market like Killeen, where it has a lot of, you know, larger military population.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because I want to know a little bit, you know, you guys do a lot of business in the Killeen marketplace, and there's a little thing just a little north of Killeen. And what's that called, Paul, where you spent some time at?
Fort Hood, largest military base in the world.
So how's the base doing? Is there any concerns about the base? Is there anything that's going on down there? I mean, I know you guys are thumbs up and you guys sell a bunch of stuff down in Killeen, but is there any concerns about Killeen?
So the military actually shrunk more when I was getting out in like 2008, 2009, 2010. So the military had peaked when they needed troops for Operation Iraqi Freedom. Now that war's kind of wound down. So the military's actually shrunk, you know, since probably 2010. And it's probably at a more stable number than it has been in a while. So the population used to be, let's say, 55,000 soldiers. They're down to probably about 40,000.
Wow.
And the military, they do this BRAC every so many years where they realign. And obviously it's very political, which states will keep their soldiers or their airmen and which ones will lose. And in Fort Hood's always been one of the most efficient places for the government to train people because of the cost of living, it being in Texas. And they, you know, they have soldiers right now, actually from Britain right now. Killeen, I got a text message from a manager saying, I need some 2 bedrooms for all these soldiers from Britain coming over for training. And, you know, across the board, all my clients are 95% occupied in Killeen. The market's done very well. A thing that's going to keep benefiting Killeen is Austin continues to grow. You have people actually living in Killeen and commuting down to Austin for work because they are just priced out of affordable apartments in the Austin market or Round Rock or Georgetown. That's now attractive for some folks to commute down. Texas A&M University actually has a satellite campus in Killeen, and that's continued to grow each year. You see a lot of healthcare spending, New Scott and White Hospital over the last couple of years, big investment there. And then a lot of things you also see is former military, whether at Fort Hood or anywhere else in the U.S., do see Killeen as an attractive place to retire because of the access to healthcare and the low cost of living.
Paint a picture of where Killeen is in the state of Texas. A lot of people who listen to this from, say, California or New York or Florida or Chicago really have no idea where Killeen is in the map.
It's just a little hour north of Austin, Texas, right off I-35, situated really between Austin and Waco.
And what are cap rates down in the Killeen area? What are you guys seeing for cap rates?
You know, we started doing more brokerage activity in 2016 down there. I'd say on a C-class deal that was stable, it was closer to an 8 cap. And I would say now it's compressed a little bit. We're probably looking at more like a 7 cap. So still very attractive, especially where interest rates are today.
And Paul, maybe educate the audience a little bit just about, you know, military markets and how lenders and investors look at military markets.
Yeah, our question always is, how much concentration is there of employment in that area, whether it is up in, say, Denton or in Cambridge, Massachusetts? So Cambridge may not have the military piece, but they definitely have college students in that area. So we're looking for concentration of employment, a concentration for workforce, and we're looking for a concentration of students. So anytime that something can be shut off that's not natural, like a Killeen with Fort Hood next door to it, but we always have kind of some concerns. Not tremendous concerns, but we want to kind of figure out, does this property itself have 40, 50, 60, 70%, or does it just have like 10 or 12 or 15% of its tenant base in the military? So we kind of have to go through that and kind of figure out what that is. If it has a concentration piece to it that's greater, say, more than 40%, we may have to get an exception on that. We kind of have to understand a little bit about what else they do, what else do the tenants do, because if there is a shutdown of the base, which that base has been open for 120 years or so, used to be a cavalry base a long time ago, and so I don't think that base is going anyplace. It's one of the biggest bases in the world, or is the biggest base for the United States in the world, and so we don't have a problem with that. But we do like Killeen, we do like Temple, that area, we like Georgetown, we definitely like Austin. And there is a progressive growth from Austin up to Dallas, and Killeen kind of fits right in that bucket of where the progression of employment, progression of people living, wanting to live in a little bit of a out of the way area. And, you know, there's some nice opportunities down in Killeen.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like that Fort Hood's a stable base and there's a lot of demand drivers in that market. So we'll also want to ask you guys, I mean, what's the current buyer profile in the market and how is the buyer profile different in Killeen versus DFW versus San Antonio, or is it similar types of buyers? What are you guys seeing?
I would say one of the differences is we don't see the syndicators as active as in Killeen as we do in DFW. Some of the syndication groups have steered away from it. And so a lot of times we are maybe dealing with high net worth individuals out of California, out of Houston, other markets where they may have a couple partners and they're looking for the cash on cash return that's there. They see an opportunity to do unit renovations that maybe they did in other larger markets, but really these properties in Killeen are largely untouched. So Wayner's been down there since 2017. And so they've been doing a lot of their upgrades for their current clients, and they're seeing large rent increases just from doing like the vinyl plank flooring, the counter resurfacing. And so you have a lot of this product that's never been touched by sophisticated investors that are, you know, owning in primary markets that now these new owners are able to do that increased rents. There's really no development down there. So you have a increasing population and there's not a lot of new product that's being developed in that market.
Yeah, Wayner, who manages over 23,000 apartment units, mostly in the state of Texas, just like Paul was saying, has gone down there and done some rehabs of properties and have got a kick of additional rental income based on the improvements to the units themselves.
And you got to look at, too, we just listed Century Plaza. It's 256 units in Killeen, managed by Wayner, and that active duty military population is about 30%. Other properties I closed last September, 177 units, they had zero active duty soldiers. So it kind of depends on the ownership group. If they're targeting military, the military are good tenants. They pay. They have a stable job. John and I are under escrow on Country Place, and that's about 80% military. And the properties are very close. So it kind of depends on how that management group is targeting their tenants.
We definitely like military concentration to some extent because we do know that we can go to the company commander and petition to make sure that that tenant pays their rent.
Right. Definitely. And they afford higher rents. So a lot of times the nicer buildings that will have military, more of a B-class product, or the C-class, the military, they can afford nicer apartments.
Sure.
So what's winning deals today, not just in Killeen, but throughout the state of Texas in the areas that you operate on? Is it price? Is it quality of the buyer coming in? How are you guys making decisions on why to go with this group versus another group? What's helping you on that?
I think it's a combination of all three, Paul. The deal we awarded in Fort Worth, Manzana Grove, a few months ago, actually went to a buyer that didn't have the top price, but they were willing to put up $500,000 hard,
wow,
released to the seller day one because they really wanted the deal. And this was a Miami-based operator. So there were some higher offers, but the seller went with them because of their terms were strong. You know, the other deal that we sold in Fort Worth went to Lifestyles, and that was a highly contested deal. And I had closed with that buyer before. He'd done a great job. So we were comfortable, you know, with him and recommended to the seller that he go with Lifestyles. So there's several things that come in. It's price, it's terms, and it's reputation.
Okay. So it's not just price and hard money necessarily.
I think reputation has a ton to do with it because, you know, we've both been in some transactions where retrades have happened and some transactions where deals didn't close the first time. I know Paul had a tough one in Killeen that was under contract a couple of times and did finally get it closed. But, you know, after a few experiences like that, the buyer's reputation is really important.
So let's talk a little bit about that. A lot of people that listen to the podcast are brand new. They don't have a reputation. How do they get a reputation? How do they get into your wheelhouse to even have a good conversation with you to be taken seriously?
Well, the first thing I always ask people is, you know, are you a part of some sort of an education? You know, are you a member of Lifestyles? Are you a member of Brad Sumrock Multifamily? Because we like working with those folks. We've sold them a lot of deals and they have a reputation of closing and being able to raise equity. The person that's just, you know, wants to be in real estate, but doesn't have any support behind them is going to have a real tough time, almost an impossible time buying here in DFW. You know, so really that's the way we are kind of approaching new buyers to the market.
And who's their lender, and can I pick up the phone and speak with them? And mm-hmm. what can that lender tell me about their qualifications? They've probably seen their financials, understand it. And then outside of the lender, what's your plan for managing the property? And can we pick up the phone and talk to that group as well?
Yeah. How many times when you guys are going through your kind of your best and final, and you got a couple of accepted LOIs that you're thinking about trying to narrow that down and trying to pick the winner, pick the horse in the race here. How many times will you get on a conference call with the seller, with the buyer, and what kind of questions are you asking the potential buyer?
Sure. We did that just the other day, and they want to know about the business plan. They want to know about interest rate flexibility, you know, because rates are so low now, if they go up 25 or 50 basis points, you know, can they absorb that? They want to know, you know, where their equity's coming from. Are they going to have to go out and raise the money, or is it proprietary capital that they're in charge of? And they want to know about, you know, what they're pro-forming for rents and what they're pro-forming for taxes. And we're facilitating these questions to make sure that the buyer's underwriting is in line with the market and with what can actually be achieved.
Yeah, that is so important, is that the seller has an opportunity for the buyer to buy, but wants to make sure that that buyer's qualified, that has underwritten the transaction, lender's on board, their equity's on board, has the equity seen the property? Is the equity the sponsor himself? So there's a lot of questions that you have to go through to kind of move the ball down the field to make sure this is the right buyer for the property. And I'm going to reverse that question. Is there any times that you guys have picked a horse that's turned out to be the wrong horse? And why is that, without naming names, but why did that person not perform?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've seen people lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in earnest money because they didn't have either the lending relationship as solid as they thought it would be, and or the equity was not as clean. You know, especially these new groups, they take for granted how hard it is for someone to write them a check to commit the capital, and you need that. You can't be $500,000 short on a $3 million equity raise. You can't close the deal that way.
Right.
So it can happen, and we've seen it, unfortunately.
So it seems like people that are coming into the market, or maybe new entrants to the market, they really need to be prepared before they start reaching out to listing brokers, before they start submitting offers. So, you know who your lender is and who you want to work with on the lending side. Maybe get familiar with some management companies that are in the market, and obviously, you know, have the equity component of it figured out so you don't run into that situation where you're $500,000 short on a $3 million equity raise. And so it can certainly happen. So given where the market is today, it's very competitive. Cap rates, you know, remain pretty low here in DFW and across Texas. And a lot of these properties that have sold, they've been through a few different investors since 2013, 2014, where people have already done a few different value add business plans. And so how are people adding value? You know, where is the meat on the bone? Where's the upside on some of these properties that you're seeing?
You know, we just closed a 384 unit deal in San Antonio in May, and that deal was unique that it was only 50% occupied.
What? Well, what was the story on that?
The current ownership group, I think at some point, was not putting money back into the property, and it was built in the mid-40s. Mm. And he had these entire buildings fenced off because the city of San Antonio, you know, he couldn't have a few tenants, so he had to kind of consolidate tenants into certain buildings, fence out the ones that were not fully occupied, and he actually had some units that were probably rentable, but he would need to spend money, you know, turning the other part of the building.
He just kind of ran out of cash.
Ran out of cash, had a loan with kind of a regional lender, and just kind of lost interest. He was in his, you know, late 60s and wanted to retire to Mexico, and I think it just wasn't a focus area for him. And we'd been closing other deals in San Antonio. One of our younger brokers got him on the phone, and John and I helped him put in one of our clients into the deal, and they closed it, and now they're starting to turn it. And they'll probably transact on it within the year because they're not going to bring it to, you know, 90% occupancy for 90 days, but they will bring it up probably to the mid-80s. And that was unique. That traded for under 30 a door. You know, I think a lot of the deals we see in Killeen haven't had the interior renovations yet. There's still opportunity for value add there. Even in Fort Worth, we traded on Manzana Grove. That was one of the last complexes that hadn't gone through interior renovations. The owner actually owned a property nearby, and so they saw how they had changed that over. So that was unique. You know, we're under contract on a deal in Lawton, and that's going to be under 30 a door as well, and opportunity for a new buyer to come in and kind of turn that one, put some fresh equity into the deal, new debt, gets an opportunity to renovate. I think a lot of these owners, longtime owners, maybe at some point run out of capital and they don't want to do a refi, and it's just better to sell.
John?
I've got 151 units on the market in Garland right now, and it's very much, you know, a second generation renovation. Current owner's done a great job with the exterior of the property, painted, redone the parking lot, taking care of some of the major mechanical issues that the property had. And now, and they've done some flooring. When they did, you guys put the loan on back a couple of years ago, and it, at that time, they only needed water savings to get the green financing. So now somebody can come in and upgrade the lighting. And when they got the green financing the first time, all they needed to do was shower heads and aerators. So now the opportunity is for the toilets for the new owner to come in and replace those. You know, probably in that submarket, we're not going to take it overboard with, you know, new appliances and granite, but just doing some hardware on the cabinets, new light fixtures, ceiling fans, replacing the plugs and switches from that beige to all white, you know, does a lot for the tenants and, you know, for increasing rents.
And we did what's the deal on that property?
We did. James Ng and I did what's the deal a couple weeks ago. It's called the Crossings. It's actually just called Crossings, excuse me, in Garland, 151 units.
So definitely recommend. I mean, it is July 2019 and people might be listening after this property has been under contract. But, you know, if you haven't already, maybe tune in to the what's the deal and keep an eye out for those what's the deal webinars that come out. They're really great, and you can learn a lot about that property and other properties that are on the market. So are there any types of properties or any situations that are, you know, there's a little bit more softness in the market where there's less demand for certain properties and areas where buyers are starting to push back?
You know, I would say any deal that we do a valuation in Oklahoma, we are more cautious in our underwriting. We don't see buyers stretching for deals in OKC or Tulsa. We are much more conservative in our underwriting there, I would say. John?
Yeah, smaller deals also. You know, we sold 69 units in Oklahoma last month. I've got 21 units on the market in Denison, 16 units coming to the market in Grand Prairie. The smaller deals are, they're not as exciting to folks because they're a little bit more challenging to manage.
But the smaller deals, like the one down in Grand Prairie, is good for somebody that hasn't been in the market, that's looking for probably a stabilized asset, and just gets their big toe into the bathtub thinking that they can gradually get into the multifamily business. So 16 units is something that maybe if you're trying to do an independent owner, an IROC type of a deal, that is a one way of getting into the smaller properties, gives you kind of a stepping stone to a bigger property. Checks your box and experience, checks your box of closing, and then you can take that to buy maybe an 80-unit deal or a 100-unit deal down the road.
Right. Let me walk back what I said a little bit, because this is a fantastic deal for somebody. It's just when you talk about having 10 offers with $500,000 released to the seller day one, it's not that kind of a deal. But this property is going to cash flow really well for somebody. It's been completely renovated. They're all townhomes across the street from a park with a playground. It's a great, like as you said, stepping stone for somebody looking to get into larger multifamily.
That seller has done a great job on that property. It's a great location. They had to put some TLC into that property. They owned it after they stabilized it for a number of like a year or two, and they're just clipping their coupon and moving on. So it's a good opportunity for somebody that maybe has not been in the multifamily business to take a look at a smaller deal. A little bit more difficult to manage, but if you live in and around the area, you can kind of self-manage a small property like that.
Or if you own a 40 to 80 unit deal within 3 miles, opportunity to add more units, a different type of unit than you already have in the Grand Prairie area right now.
Right.
So between us girls, and let's say we're all investors here, what are the better markets that you're seeing right now to put investable dollars in? What do you think has the biggest pop, has the highest cap rates? What do you think if you were putting your own money to work, where would you go?
I was looking at Yardi Matrix and forecasts and kind of where the rent growth has been over the last year. I really like that Garland Richardson market, especially for what we deal with, which is, you know, we've sold a couple of A-class deals, but the majority of our business is workforce housing, B and C class. Richardson, 7% rent growth, Garland, 6.5%. There's a lot of kind of communities in Tarrant County towards that southern part, south of Fort Worth, that are getting some
Why so much rent growth over there? What do you think the reason or cause is?
I think it's supply and demand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're building new apartment buildings, but they're building new apartment buildings that are, you know, class A, full amenitized properties, but they're not building the class B, minus C plus, or C properties. So, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are in the area, high technology, but they, you know, the properties that you guys are selling are 30, 40 years old. Those are the people that we're talking to do loans for, that want to buy those type of properties. So I like the play in Richardson, Garland, the older properties with the workforce housing that's supporting the high technology folks. Anything more to add to that, guys?
Yeah, I would say I would ask the groups that own in DFW to take a look at Central Texas, look at Killeen again. You may have looked at it a few years ago, but I would say look at the underwriting, look at the debt quotes from Old Capital on Century Plaza, and we'll have another deal or two in Killeen during the year. But they do underwrite.
Like Temple too?
I like Temple too. Yeah. If we could find some product to sell, I think that's a good market as well. Same thing. Benefits on the corridor there, like just like Killeen, growing. You know, Killeen's larger than Waco. If you look at population trends, Central Texas only looks like a great place to grow and to own long term. You have good management firms there now. Agency debt's available, 75% LTV. Debt service a little bit higher at 1.3. But any deal that any broker selling in Killeen is going to underwrite well. This is not a market where, like in Fort Worth, we can get a buyer to close at 70% LTV. It's going to qualify. We're going to underwrite to that debt very strictly. So I'd say check out the Old Capital debt quote for Century Plaza. We just listed it last week before the 4th of July holiday and are starting to tour it now.
You are very patriotic. I will tell you that. Military background. Promoting
Killeen expert.
Yeah, promoting the Fort Hood and the Killeen area. I certainly like that. And especially with some of these tenants that are down there too. You know, they are typically a very stabilized tenant. They're going to live in that property until they get a change, and then another person's going to come in to occupy that property, perhaps out of the Army too. What are some of the takeaways that you guys have with the momentum right now just in multifamily? Are you still seeing the amount of people knocking on your doors? Still seeing the amount of people looking to sell? I mean, is there still an imbalance of more buyers than sellers? And what's your take on that?
I do think there's more buyers than sellers. What I've seen in the market lately is folks going down to Houston, going out to El Paso. I mentioned we have three deals in escrow in those markets. You know, folks are turning over every rock and trying to look at every deal they can. A lot of deals are being done off market. And, you know, for us, that's been a lucrative thing. And then on our fully marketed deals, we've got the call for offers on crossings at the end of July here. And I expect to have, you know, a handful of strong buyers, you know, that could all qualify.
And then what's your take on submarkets where, you know, historically there's been high crime, or maybe 5 years ago, there are properties selling for 30,000 a unit. Now properties are selling for 80,000 a unit. You know, there's been a great run in some of these submarkets, but what's your view on those types of areas?
So we closed 500
two
units,
deals on Las Vegas Trail
recently. over in Las Vegas Trail area. And those have been historically pretty rough properties. The city of Fort Worth is doing a lot right now to try to improve that area. And some of the more active owners are partnering with them and really trying to step that up. And you could still get in at an attractive basis. I think both those deals sold for under 40 a unit.
Yep. That's, you know, even on Villa Sierra Vista, which we closed in mid-June, the occupancy was still lighter. Wainer had done upgrades for that owner, and they were getting nice rent bumps. And the new owner's going to take it from, you know, 75% occupancy with higher rents than when he bought it over to 90, and that'll be a good opportunity for that owner to refi. And hold it. Like you said, John said, they're improving that area. And these are some of the last properties that really needed new ownership to inject new capital, improve the tenant base.
Sure.
So I'm going to give you a few minutes here to tell us a little bit about what you want to have people know about you guys and your experience level and the market itself. I'll give you a whiteboard here, and you just kind of list some of the things that you think are important for investors that either are here in Texas already or want to come to some of the areas that you guys sell in. What's important for people to know right now?
Well, you know, pick up the phone and give us a call. We're happy to talk through some of this stuff with folks, you know, and tell them just like we've kind of talked about, educate them on here's the ducks you need to get in a row in order to find a deal. And here's what we're seeing as far as people having success. For the sellers out there, I would say, you know, also give us a call because, you know, you need multiple opinions of value. Kind of sometimes things slip through the cracks, you know, especially on some of the tougher deals, and also that we're in multiple markets. So we kind of have a little bit of a better pulse on, you know, what's going on a broad scale, just personally, than some folks that are just strictly focused on one market.
Paul?
Yeah, I would say with 9 brokers in the office and often most of them very hungry with a lot of off-market deals, form a relationship with the guys, and we can kind of show you a lot of different markets all at once. I mean, we just went under contract in Lawton. We're under contract in El Paso. San Antonio, we always have at least one escrow right now. Killeen, we have a large escrow in Houston right now. So depending on where you want to be in Texas, we probably have a broker in the office that's making calls into that market regularly. And I would say new off-market opportunities are coming each week. New listings you'll see on our website get added to our distro. And form a relationship with one of our guys. They'll be happy to help you, and hopefully we can work with you guys in the future.
Yeah, your reputation out there is fantastic. I can't say enough about these two guys and the company that they've kind of formed and put together. Hopefully down the road you'll be as famous as Roger Staubach or Weitzman on the same side, leaving Henry S. Miller and creating your own path. So we appreciate you guys spending some time. If somebody wanted to get in contact with you, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Probably go to our website, multifamilygrp.com, and all of our phone numbers and emails are right there under advisors.
That sounds good. John Brixen, anything more to add?
Guys, thanks for coming in today, and congrats on the success of Multifamily Group, first couple of years in business, and look forward to closing some more deals with you guys.
And I'll finish off by saying to Paul Yazbek, thank you for your service.
You're welcome, sir.
We appreciate that. Again, John Krebs, Paul Yazbek, John Brixen, thanks for sending in. I'm Paul Peebles. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Old Capital Real Estate Investing Podcast. Please join us at oldcapitalpodcast.com to sign up for our weekly email updates. We'll see you next week for another great interview.